I'm going to invite all of you on a little ride with me. That's how we'll begin. On this elevator, with only one silver button to push, there are women in business suits carrying briefcases, women in skinny jeans carrying babies, women pursing red lips under straw hats, none dressed in a blue gown. I am in my mother's turquoise bathrobe, an IV hooked to my left arm, juggling two boxes of black high-heel shoes in my right hand. A woman in a green and brown house dress knocks them from my hand, bends to pick them up, falls, get up. The elevator doors open. The elevator empties. The doors close. I push the silver button with my elbow. The elevator goes up faster and faster. I want it to stop. I want to get off. Finally, it stops. A woman in a black wool coat gets on. I try to get off, but the doors close. The elevator soars, stops. The woman in the black wool coat gets off. I get off. I am lost. Where is the woman in the blue gown? I am late, but I don't know for what. My shoe boxes fall. No shoes inside. Blue shards of porcelain slash my bare feet. Okay. Now, I often write in the first person, but not everything is autobiographical. And if it is, there's a lot of little lies in it. Okay, all right. Confession. I take my husband's hand in mine. Sit down. There is something I need to tell you. There was a man many years ago. He stood under the street lamp outside our bedroom window, smoking one cigarette after the other. His hair was black, his face bearded. Although I can't say for sure, he must have had piercing black eyes. One night, as I began to undress for bed, I noticed his head tilted upward. I should have closed the Venetian blinds. I didn't. Okay. Two more. Yes. Where have all the people gone? I am lonely in my bed next to the man I love. I asked an elusive God, where have all the people gone? This is what it must be like to be in a war zone, a constant search for bodies, always looking, seldom finding. Where is the woman with diabetes, the one with bulky shoes over missing toes, the one who always complained, said she would die soon, and did? The carefree girl who married men who stifled her songs, content to wheel her in a chair rather than see her happy feet and dance. The woman who shopped till she dropped, buying clothes at Gimbel's Bargain Basement for her brother's children. Where is her husband? The man with the yellow car who drove her to and from her brother's house, bringing clothes in, taking them out again and again. Each morning, I waken to a cardinal perched on my desk swing. Is that the young woman taken from her 11-year-old son? She flies away when I come near. Shadows follow me everywhere. I see them on my hall walls at night when the lights are turned off. Who are they? Yeah. Okay. And I will close with this. When I die, I want heaven to be a long, hot shower. Droplets of water falling from my back, pulsating down my arms, along my thighs, ankles, and feet. I want to feel damp hair brush against my face and let the hot spray above my head warm my open mouth. I want to linger in the swell of wet heat on my skin until it washes away Earth's mosquitoes and dirt. Thank you. And now we have a prolific poet in our group, Anne Curran. You're on your, what, fifth or sixth book? No. Okay.
I think I'll stand. You guys are really paying attention. You know, it's wonderful. I'm here to sell books, but also to read poems. I'm going to read first from my newest book, Irish Eyes, and second from, I don't know what number this was, it's called Me First. So from the Irish one. I'll start with my immigrant grandpa's cottage. It took a century for the Irish to tear down my grandfather's stone cottage and let some other curran grow cabbage, potatoes, scallions in the family shrine. The old stones disappeared. Nothing remains of the man I knew from a torn photo, an ancient obituary, our first bad heart, early death, whose pastor gave him a key to St. Mary of the Mount Church because he arrived first at daily mass. I stand alone there by the tiny field, no fireplace for turf-scented Irish tales, no stone he might have touched before he left, a hillside house with back to Galway Bay. Now that's the Galway side of the family. Now the Kerry side, the Scanlons. Success in Kerry for Bridget Scanlon Hayes. Great Aunt Bridget wrote to me about the grand success of her daughter, Sarah Buckley. She married a man with 30 cows. He was old, gave her one son. The cows had their own parlor. Sarah took me down to see it. Automatic milking, just hook up those teats. No more squeezing at dawn in damp and cold. On that first visit, I asked to use the bathroom. Sarah led me to her bedroom. Months of dust on the desert, on the dresser. She pointed to a scrub bucket and no toilet paper nearby. Later, her son added a bathroom. That's called success in Kerry. Okay. And this is from Me First. And it's about Steelers, sort of. Me and Franco Harris and Lynn Swan played tennis at the same club, now devoted to soccer and such. Me, a B-minus player, they Sterling Pittsburgh Steelers. One day, those Pro Football Hall of Famers helped me with a key match simply by being there, right on the next court. All of their good-looking glory, totally distracting my opponent. All I noticed was two hard hitters. I didn't even know they were Steelers. Okay. But she couldn't keep her eyes on the ball, missing my wimpiest shots. Those guys with their eight Super Bowl rings and me beat the crap out of that ditzy dame, and I became the round robin runner-up, one for the bum. Me and Columbus and the blubberers. Let me tell you about Columbus. This is all you really need to know. One day in 1493, as he guided the Nina, Pinta, and Santa Maria near the future Dominican Republic, he wrote in his journal that he saw three mermaids. They popped right up out of the water, weren't as beautiful as they are painted, and looked more like guys than sexy gals. The Grand Mariner was at sea way too long. Biologists believe he saw manatees, great bubblers, that's a tough word, great blubberers with eyes to break your heart. Me and Paul Mellon. I didn't actually, a lot of the poems in here are people that I did interviews with for various publications. And then there are also some people that I didn't know at all. And this is one of them. Me and Paul Mellon. Me and Paul Mellon rank a warm bath as one of life's greatest gifts. Not together, of course. Rising into the steaming water, closing the shower door to hold the heat inside, snuggling down with a magazine that takes occasional quick dips, reaching up with toes to twist the H spigot again. For me, a joy to match the sun igniting a million diamonds on snow. For him, a rival to a rotating parade of treasured masterpieces borrowed from his storehouse and hung in his own home gallery, the ultimate one-man show. That painted line separates us. Maybe our soap choices do too. And do I have a minute or, okay. I'm reading this one just to show that we sometimes make mistakes. This one is called Me and Bill Cosby. And Rosalie said, why don't you drop that from the book? She had already heard rumors. I said, oh, what the heck, you know. Anyway, me and Bill Cosby didn't actually meet. One day, I arrived at the racket club and found him leaning against the railing, no doubt waiting for his opponent, Dr. Cosby, who dug laughs out of the ordinary, took us inside his family, showed us how human and stupid they could be. We saw ourselves among his kids, in his wife, in himself. Google chocolate cake for breakfast and you'll understand. I was so thrilled to see this comic genius, I could do no more than rave about his recent Jell-O ad. And he never bought me a drink and didn't offer me a pill or anything. Anyway, thanks so much, guys.